It's Primus Drax with Josh, Frankie, and Sawyer.
What a couple of dumb shits.
Hello, Primates! You found Primus Drax, congratulations! We are at Primus Drax on Instagram and Twitter, and you can email us at primustraxpod@gmail.com. I am Josh, and I doff my cap to Frankie and Sawyer.
Hi, Josh.
Hi, Josh.
Hey, Sawyer. Whoa, Sawyer sounds really polite today, and that worries me. I also
it's great
will,
to be here always. Come on
excellent
now.
Excellent, man. I will also doff my cap and bow in a gentlemanly manner to our guest today. He was on the Primus Road crew, and you guys can tell me if that makes you a road hog or a road dog. I don't remember. But this was for the Punch Bowl and Brown tours, I believe, and please correct me if I'm wrong. But Chris Chausset, a.k.a. Cheese, welcome to Primus Drax.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
You guys, this is a heavyweight. This guy...
Yeah, I'm literally the biggest guy.
He's the tallest dude. He took a load bar on his head one night on the Beck Tour. Best thing I've ever seen in my life that he survived that. And here he is to live and tell us the tales of the Brown Tour and the Punch Bowl Tour.
I kind of want to start there. I mean, we are talking about Hats Off today, track number 7 for the Brown album. But geez, Chris, which I'll probably use interchangeably, and you're probably used to both. What was your path to working with Primus on tour?
Well, my first path to Primus was I saw him at Celland Arena in Fresno in like 92, opening for Rush.
Very good.
And I can't remember. I think I had a friend that was working for Rush, so I got tickets because I had been touring for a couple years at that point. I was a stagehand in Fresno prior, and so I would go to all the shows. And then I think a buddy of mine was on the tour, so I didn't have to work that day. And Primus came out, and I think Les said something like, oh, we're Primus, we suck, we're here to prove it.
Yeah.
And to me, they did. It's too loud. I wasn't into it at the moment.
Yeah.
And then but everything else I had heard, I liked. It was just this show. I was like, I don't like this show. I didn't like Rush that much either. But, you know, I know it's sacrilege in the Primus Rush era. It's like, but I wasn't a super huge fan. I liked their music, but I wasn't like a super huge fan. And then I got, I was doing the Grateful Dead, like fast forward into the mid 90s. And I was doing the Grateful Dead, and a good buddy of mine, Matt Hash, one of the sound guys for the Grateful Dead, said, hey, this Primus thing's coming up, and you should be the lighting crew chief. And I was like, okay, that sounds cool. That'd be great. And he goes, okay, well, we're going to be playing. I think we were in New York, and Derek Featherstone came down to interview me to see if I was an okay dude to be on the thing. And we had a short conversation, and he was like, okay, sounds like it's going to work out. And then I got the tour dates for the first leg of the Punch Bowl tour, and they conflicted with the dates I was doing with the Grateful Dead. And the Grateful Dead was an ongoing, you know, it was, I did 3 tours a year with them. And so I was like, well, I can't, this is a cash cow over here to go do a tour that's just going to be a couple months long. And so I turned it down.
Oh, wow.
And then Jerry Garcia died. And a spot opened up. So my schedule became wide open for the next 5 years. So they did the first leg without me. And then I came in and did the second and third legs of the Punch Bowl tour.
Okay. And stuck around for Brown. How old are you in 92 when you first see them with Rush?
22.
So you're a young dude, I guess appropriately jarred by them. In the intervening years before you get on tour, were you able to rectify that at all? And then you're back. Then all of a sudden you're working for this band.
Part of the thing with like liking bands and not liking bands has a lot to do with just like meeting them. Like in 1990, I was late 80s or I was into hair metal. I lived in Fresno. That's all they had.
Yeah.
It was my only option. There was nothing funky going on down there.
Like and, Trickster and Winger.
I toured with all those dudes. They all opened for Poison when I was there. That was first tour was Poison. That's who they, and so I was like going out on a tour like Poison's like, I was a fan of theirs. They were fine. They write, you know, hit songs or, you know, hits.
Oh, they sold tickets, man.
They sold tickets. They were catchy. You know, there were a lot of girls. Yeah. I don't know. It was, you know, I was 20 when I started touring with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wasn't even allowed into bars.
But it was like a big gig, though. I mean, it wasn't like you had a choice. You got hired and you worked that big gig. And it's like,
yeah, I got hired. My first gig was in like the Mid-South Coliseum. I'd never done a show that had more than 3 guys on it. And I'm on a tour that's got like 6 lighting guys and 6 sound guys.
And like a bunch of buses and trucks and stuff.
I'd never been on a tour bus before. And, you know, so it was like, it was all big stuff for me. So as I got older, it became more, about being friends with the band.
Uh-huh.
And I don't mean friends like we're pals, but it's like if they were easily friendly. Approachable.
Yeah.
You know, and the dudes in Poison, like there was too many people there. Primus, when I got on that tour, that was like a small tour, and it was just kind of, we were two buses and it was just us. And like those guys were easy to talk to and hang out with, and they could just walk up and start talking to you.
Yeah.
And it was, we're all doing the same thing. You know what I mean? Like we're here to put on a show tonight.
It's business.
And that was them.
Mr. Les Claypool.
Yeah. It wasn't anything like that. It was just like, we're all here to put on a show tonight. Let's put on the best show we can.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to come in.
The difference is, you know, like Primus are dudes, and you know, the bigger bands are machines making money. They love to make money like anybody does, like we all do, but they never set out to be money makers, you know? I've been to Manny's storage and seen all the road cases that say, Poison, Mr. Brett Michaels. It's like, Jesus Christ. It's like, you have to call him Mr. Brett Michaels when you talk to him. It's like,
yeah, there were definitely some artists that were like that. And then there were other ones like, you know, I was on the Grateful Dead for 3 years and I had one conversation with Jerry Garcia. I never spoke with Bob Weir, never spoke to Phil Lesh.
Yeah.
Talked to Mickey Hart a little bit. Like it just didn't happen that way. They were like, so I was saying, they were a machine. Like that thing was just, it was packed kind of tight and everything was on this little schedule. And it was just, there was no hangout time. Like they never showed up to a gig early.
Well, the cool thing about Primus, like as you got into that, I totally remember you were had a wall up against me because I was on the inner circle with the band guys and I was trying to break that down going, dude, it's all good, man. Like these guys are cool. And all of a sudden we're like in Belgium and we're at some bar in Les and Lure. They're drinking beers and they're buying you beers. You're like, whoa, this is actually kind of cool, man. Like the band guys are actually hanging out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So when Soya would show up, so here's what would happen is I'd load in about 8 a.m. and Soya'd show up cool 4-5 o'clock. Just come strolling in, you know, and it's DC gear and I'm all dirty and grungy and stuff. And he's just, you know, skater out and comes rolling in and he's like, okay, I need you to move this so I can to the bank. And I was like, dude, I've been working all day. You show up at 4 and you just tell me where to put. I go, hey, show up earlier if you want to be in charge of where stuff goes. And so like, I was just like, who is this dude coming in here, telling me what to do, telling me what he needs and what needs to go on. And it was like, all right, so we get everything going. And then Soya's thing is, I'm going to make this dude like me. Like, there's no reason to hate me, you know?
Yeah.
And when I finally realized that Soya was the hardest working person on the tour was we were in a hotel lobby. It was me and Porkchop and Jerry. And we were getting ready to go to the mall, you know, because that's what we did on our days off was just go to the mall. So we were in the hotel lobby and we're down there. Day off. And so we're getting ready to go to the mall and Soya comes downstairs and like, hey, Soya, dude, we're heading to the mall, dude. You want to go? And you're like, nope, can't. I was like, what's up? So got to rent a car. Like, why do you got to rent a car? Got to take him golfing. I was like, what do you mean? You got to rent a car, take them. They can go golf. Just tell them to get it. And nope, got to go. And boom, he was out the door and getting golf clubs, getting tee times and getting cars. And then I was like, oh, okay. Well, then the next couple days off later, doing the same thing. We're going to get something to eat. Soya comes downstairs. Hey, Soya, what are you going to do? Got to go get a car. What do you mean? I got to go rent a car. We're going to go guitar shopping today. And I was like, you don't want to go guitar shopping. He's like, yeah, I got to drive. I got to get him in the car. And so it was like, I was like, oh, Soya's day off aren't days off. They are managing those guys.
Those were the busiest. There was no days off for me ever.
Yeah.
On tour.
And that's when I realized, I was like, oh, Soya works hard. I mean, I was working like kind of 8 a.m. to about midnight, you know, during the day
with an 8-hour break in between.
Yeah, I had some breaks in there, but like Soya was just want, you know, get up in the morning, make sure they got all their bags downstairs, make sure that nobody forgets anything, then get back to get them all on the bus, get them to the gig, and then call the gig and go, Larry left his bag, can you go get his toiletry? You know, it was like all this, it was just nonstop. And I was like, oh yeah, Soya's doing the best he can with what they're giving him, and they were effing him a lot.
It was trippy to show up at the gig because the Punch Bowl tour was the first big bus tour I ever did. Jeez, you know,
yeah,
that's the first time I ever was on a bus. But man, getting out there and busting my ass and hustling like I do, and running into guys like you that thought, "Who's this guy? Fuck this little dude. He's just a band friend. Fuck this guy." And Chris Cherukee, another character that tried to run me over the grills, and I ran him over the grills, you know, eventually. And I got his respect eventually.
Yeah.
It was awesome. You know, it's tough, man.
Sure. And I'd experienced that before. And then we experienced it later when we were doing like Weapon of Choice. Like, when did they have like 23 people on that bus?
Yeah. They're
supposed to hold 12 people. And I was like, there's only like 8 people in the
bus. And they had one 23
people on tour. Yeah. And one guy doing all the instruments.
Oh my God. I was trying to help them out.
Yeah. So you did a couple of tours with Primus Cheese. And then did you get the cheese name from Les? Cause it seems like as soon as you're near him, you get a name.
I got the cheese name on Poison. I came out, I was the youngest guy on the tour, and the next youngest guy was just who was youngest before I got there, because I joined the tour about a month in. His name was Junior because he was the youngest guy, and this guy, when you're the youngest and the new guy, they just give you shit the whole time.
Yeah.
And so this guy, he was mad at me and gets on the bus, and he's just, what the hell is your name? Cheesy, or what are you called? And there was 6 guys in the front lounge and went, well, cheese is going to be it. And that was it from then on. I was like, all right, well, I'll just own that. Cause what are you going to do? It's like, you don't get to pick your nickname. Like, cause everybody be Spike or Snake or Spider. It's like, I just got to stick with cheese. Fuck it. We'll just go with it.
Soya or whatever.
Yeah. You get soy. It's like that, but that's what it is. Is if everybody picked their own nickname, they'd have some cool ones, you know,
but it's like, you don't touch on what we said earlier. It's like, once you get that nickname, a lot of people don't even know your real name because you tour around, around and around and around again. People don't even know your name. They just know cheese is on Light Scott. Yep. Cool. Yeah. Soy is here. Okay, cool. Spider's on that. Okay, cool.
Yep. I did a leg of the Grateful Dead with this guy named Spider. I didn't even bother to learn his name because I knew he wasn't coming back. I was like, nobody liked him.
It's unfortunate that Les Claypool did not give my friend Chris the nickname Cheese.
It
was a poison thing. God damn it.
We should get into our track today. It's Hats Off, track 7 from the Brown album. It checks in at a cool, what, minute and 57 seconds or something like that, Frankie? Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's right.
This is a really deep track here.
It's brief, and I have a feeling the live history is the same.
All right, this is a very interesting live history, Josh. It was never performed on the upright bass, which was the original instrument it was recorded on. It was never performed during the Brown album tour. So people did not get to hear Hats Off live until Duo the Twang performed it at San Rafael in 2012. But the thing is that this was an early configuration of Duo the Twang. So it was Les Claypool and Murph as opposed to Kehoe. After that, it entered relatively heavy rotation with Primus throughout 2012 and 2013. I mean, it was never a certainty during any portion of the tour, but it was played with a little frequency. It used to be paired next to Lee Van Cleef most of the time, but there are some performances where it was inserted randomly into the set list. And I want to point out that it was always performed on the Dobro. All right, so this song has never been performed live as it is on the record. And, I mean, it didn't become a major jam vehicle because they didn't really extend it that much, but they did give Lur a spot for extended solos in each performance. So that's Hats Off live history, and we have 2 amazing performances for later today.
So hold on, can I check in? How many times was the song played live?
26 times only.
Wow.
In the history of
Primus. And that was all post-Brown tour.
Exactly. Some of these performances are from Duo the Twang. Most of them are with Primus.
Okay. With Jay Lane on drums.
That's right.
I could have sworn that we played the song, but I guess it was always Over the Falls was the song that was on the Horde tour is with the one I did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had to they double
did, body. Yeah,
they did Over the Falls and Cutting Town sometimes, but it's a strange that, you know, that they never kept the upright.
God, I thought that they did Hats Off a couple times, and I guess not. Okay.
It's quite possible there are some set lists missing from that era.
It might have just always been Over the Falls, because that was the single, and we did the video.
Yeah. Set lists are missing? Soya, wasn't that your gig? Why are they missing? Weren't they in a book? Like everyone? Like with the drawing? What? Don't dude me. Not my gig. All the lights came on when I was there.
Well, you know, like back when I got Les to do the set list drawings, I'm the one that instigated all that. And he does that now. And he does it forever now decades now. Back then, it was like funny. It wasn't like, oh, save that.
I had a set list every night. I didn't even think to save them. I know Jake saved some.
And
had that dude, Nathan. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't think he saved any, but I know that like Jason, I think had a few. He put them in his pocket every once in a while.
I mean, dude, it took a whole leg of a tour to go, wait, we got to save these. Like, yeah. I actually, every original that Les drew, even from the first ones, we saved. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was like, save it. I knew to keep those, and they're in a bin. We have them. You know,
sure.
They're going to do, I think, a book with There's all the drawings. There are as many as the cool ones they can do. They're trying to compile that. You know,
right. Yeah. He'd do guys on the crew.
Like, oh, so Tom, funny, dude.
Jerry and just
everybody. He's still to this day, every night you have to get the picture from Les is on the set list.
Yep. Yep.
And it's like that all spawned out of one day. Les would not give me the set list. And it's like 5 minutes till the show. And he's drawing a picture of me eating a piece of shit or something, you know, like something stupid. Could not be bothered with writing the set list, you know?
Oh my God.
And he's like, here's the set list, Sawyer. And I was like, dude. The crew needs the set list, not me. And he's like, Tweakers, Jerry, dig, dag, dag, dab, bop, dab, 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 bop, 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 bop. Okay, there it is. And I was like, and I went right into production and I cut out the picture that he drew of me that he handed me as the set list. And I taped it on the set list and I copied it and gave it to everybody. It was like, oh, that's so fucking hilarious, dude. Oh my God, what is that? And I was like, Les, that's fucking pretty funny, dude. And all of a sudden he just started doing it every day.
Yeah. You know? Well, his character review is off the charts. It's quite accurate.
Yeah.
I'd be able to pick you out of a lineup, man.
Everybody. He's really good, man. He practices.
Yeah.
I go into a hotel room sometimes and he's got practice drawings of like how the hand is like this, like this, like this.
Yeah.
Like
that, this one's a popular one. The index finger up like that. Of course you did.
Josh and I have a dream that someday we will be featured on a set list. And it will involve Les being nervous about deep cuts or something like that.
That's right.
Frankie, me and Adam got Les on this thing. God damn it. You're asking for way too much now.
Frankie wants album credits. He wants.
Oh boy. I want to be in a video. Yeah.
Some liner notes. He was naming some liner notes.
Get an inch, that's take right. a mile. Come on. I'm doing my best, Frankie.
Thank you, Tim.
Hey, Sawyer, in the liner notes of the albums, are you listed as Sawyer or how do they
listen? It's always Tim Sawyer Solyan. Les would never just say, well, actually, on Suck on This, it just says Tim Sawyer.
Okay. That's right.
And then on every album after that, it just says Tim
Sawyer. I'm curious. I toured for however long and I only made on the liner notes of one album, Poison, Live Poison album.
Ah.
They listed everybody on and I was like, all right, well, I guess that's something. It ain't nothing. But you know, the bands that you like, that's the other thing is when you're on the crew like that, like some bands, but not, especially not the smaller ones, you don't get gold albums. You don't you don't get that kind of stuff. You get tour jackets and you know, all the t-shirts you ever want to wear. There's like a little stuff you kind of, there's a little bit of a separation. There's like kind of the production, which is more the band and their closer crew, you know, and then there's kind of the lights and sounds and carpenter guys are kind of, they change out a lot more often too.
Every time my name has been on a record that I've worked on, like with Beck or Sheryl Crow or Primus, of course, or Les, it's really an honorable thing to see your name up there as like included.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I made it like it's a Poison Live album. I mean, no one remembers it and who cares, but it's like, I got it. And I was like, hey, my name, and they spelled it right. Shit, that's like a win for me.
Right.
Really? Like, that doesn't usually happen either.
It's really like to work as hard as you do, like as I did on the Primus Records, which was me, Les, Lur, and Tim, that we, and Brain. We made those records. There was nobody else, you know, on those first couple ones. And that my name's on there, like, it's a badge, man. It's not like, oh, they thank me in the bottom. It's like studio assistant Tim Sawyer Solyan. It's like, fuck, dude, I drove up to Rancho Relaxo, you know, for 7 months to make this record, you know. Feels good to see your name on a record, goddammit. As minuscule as you think you are to help create what they're doing. And Frankie and Josh, you guys are fans and you go see the shows and love every moment of it and buy the records. To be a part of what happens with the recording or the show, like what Cheese does, it's a badge of honor, man.
Right.
I'm on the credits of Videoplasty.
Right on.
Awesome.
Cool. I totally get you, Tim, because I know there are people that skip that stuff. But in my case, whenever I buy an album, I read the liner notes completely. I read everything, so I get very curious about the names in each album.
All right, yeah, let's talk music. It's an interesting little track.
I'm not very technical in music. I just love it. I appreciate it, but it takes a while for me to recognize, you know, what gear Les is using. And for the longest time, I couldn't figure out that he was playing upright on this track because it sounds so different to the rest of the upright Primus tunes. Mm-hmm. I thought he was doing something crazy with our regular bass. So when I realized that he was playing upright, and then I saw all these live performances, I mean, I was actually lucky enough to catch Hats Off live once. So I got accustomed to that sound coming out of the dobro, and I just couldn't picture him doing that in the upright. So it makes me wonder what it would have sounded like if they had performed it live as it was on the record. You know, I mean, if it would have sounded the same, because when he plays it on the dobro, I mean, the notes are there brilliantly. Mm-hmm. On the record, it has such a special sound. I mean, it's hard to figure out what he's doing on that track for me on a technical level, but I just appreciate it a lot as, you know, as a piece of music, even though it's really short.
I think he played it on the four string on the recording.
Oh, he played it on the upright bass on the studio track.
You think so?
Yeah.
Were you there?
I was there. Okay. I can't remember.
Well, if you don't know, how is anybody else going to know if you were there? And well, I don't know.
The bummer is I was there.
He played bass on it. Is that? I know Les played the bass on that one.
Les played the bass.
Okay, good deal.
I didn't listen to it today. God damn it! I was so busy all day.
You didn't have 2 minutes.
No.
All it's right.
Did not.
Disappointing, Toya.
Man,
there are two more things, Josh. Yep. Speaking about the guitar. On the live recordings, we have like these really cool solos from Lur. On the studio recording, there's none of that. So right. That reminds me of what Soya told us about how, in retrospective, it would have been cool if they had more time with these songs before recording them.
Yeah.
And maybe a cool solo would have made it onto the track. I mean, we'll never know. Right. But at least they did give Lur that spot in the live recordings. Yeah. And the last thing I want to point out are the drums, which are absolutely phenomenal on this track. And could you please sample, Josh, that really cool drum roll before the second verse?
Yeah, this was actually the part I wanted to sample because Brain does some pretty fun stuff right here for about, I don't know, 6-7 seconds. That one right there. That's a fun one.
Yeah, that's always ear candy when you play that song.
Man, everything was so spontaneous, you know? Like Brain said when we talked to him, you know? He wished he had more time to, like, figure anything out other than spontaneity, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He's throwing a couple of little things in here, and I really love hitting that hi-hat and then closing it up. Like, I find myself just walking around going, kss, and just it's fun to do with your mouth, and it's always
Les loves the cymbal catch stuff, and he is always prodding Brain catch the cymbal.
Psst. Yeah. Frankie, I do want to come back around to that point of that idea that, well, there's no solo on the record, but Soya, I also remember you by the same token pointing out that going into this record, kind of like with other records, they had these kind of categories of songs, and so for me, Hats Off fits into the Over the Falls category of this is our chill song on the upright. Yeah. To break up the rest of the record. Going by that line of reasoning, which seems sound, because I wasn't there. Chris, you said somebody was there. I forget who it was.
Turk Black.
That's it. It was Turk. Yeah, my good buddy, Turk Black.
Well, you know,
I love Turk Black. I love Turk Black.
Jeez knows about Turk Black. Too. Hats Off kind of got created in the studio up there. That was not worked on down at Ultrasound. That was one of those ones that kind of came out in the jam. Well, once we loaded everything into the studio, you know.
Well, it feels like it's kind of like a half ditty, half song. Like it kind of is. It's like it's so short that it's like, well, it's just like this little filler thing in between a couple of, you know, bigger songs. But then it's, you know, it's a full song, you know, full set of lyrics. And, you know, only thing it really is kind of missing to lengthen it out would be a solo somewhere in there. It just seems like it's just like this little and then we're out. And then here's your next song. And
I mean, that was pretty much the par for the course for the Brown Album songs as they made them. Made it up, part, out, next one. part, next one, you know?
Kind of seems like if you start playing it and then by the time you start getting into it, you're done.
Yeah.
You're playing it live. You know what I mean? Like you're, all right, let's get this thing up and going. And then, oh, no, we're out. So, because I watched a couple of the live performances and the one where Lur's just going on for solo for days. And I was like, oh, okay, there you go. That's what that song means. Yeah.
And you, more Lur. You point to something. It could have been an album interlude, but those interludes tend to be shorter than 2 minutes and also pretty silly, you know, on the face. And this one is kind of, it's a straight ahead folky tune, kind of like Over the Falls, like a traditional number in a sense. So
it's better than Over the Falls for me.
It's a legit tune.
Wow. I like this one better than Over the Falls.
I'm going to let that just sit there.
I like Hats Off. Come on, man.
Well, what I really like about it is much like Over the Falls, it doesn't overstay its welcome. 2 minutes, it's a cool little number, and it's got its little bits, and it's done. You know, Frankie, you talked about the bass, and honestly, when I listen to it, I don't hear everything that's going on with the bass or the upright bass because I'm listening to the guitar. And Chris, you're a guitarist. Wait, you're a guitarist or a guitar player?
Player.
You're a guitar player, not a guitarist.
Yeah.
Thank you. I want to make sure I honor that distinction. But as a guitar player, one who plays guitar, it does sound to me, I'm listening to the guitar because it sounds like it's double tracked on electric and acoustic. Or was Larry playing an acoustic electric and the strings were mic'd as well as the amp? I can't really tell what's going on there with the sound. And and Soya, he wasn't there.
I cannot remember.
Yeah, so if someone was just there to...
Yeah.
Never mind. If somebody, yeah, I don't...
somebody...
It just sounds like it's in a big room to me. You know what I mean? It just got like tons of reverb on it, kind of just rings out. And I was like, okay, it's a cool little lick. And it just goes over and over and over again. Yeah. And I was like, wow, this is... tedious, but it only goes on for 2 minutes. So there you go.
Well, when I listen to it on in earbuds or nicer headphones, I'm definitely hearing what sounds like two guitars, but I once again can't tell. Plus, as we've said, the blown out production doesn't really help your ears too much when you're trying to suss things out. So it's a strange one in that regard, as far as the guitar. But it does sound like too he's doing some finger picking, isn't he? Is he doing a little finger picking there? Do that part.
I don't think he needs to. I mean, you can play it without a finger.
We might have layered some stuff on like that. I can't remember.
I've never actually seen video of a live cut of this, so I don't know if he's putting the pick in his mouth and finger picking it for a little bit, or Frankie would know.
When I witnessed the song live in person, I was staring at Les in utter disbelief that they were performing this song. So I have no recollection of what Lur was doing.
I guess I'll give you a pass. You were in utter disbelief.
The video I watched looked like he was playing with a pick, but I didn't really concentrate on that. I was just kind of like, oh, okay.
Chris, I want to ask you about this. It's on my list of things to ask you is you're on tour with Primus and you are a guitar player, but you're watching this guitarist, Larry Lalonde, who's so far afield in what he does. So when you're watching him, what's going through your mind? And is there anything you can take from his playing, for yourself?
Oh, yeah, no, there's nothing I could take from his playing. It's way too far above anything I've got. It was really great watching him. One time, this used to happen every once in a while. So Matt, the guy I mentioned, Matt Hash, that I did the Grateful Dead with, he was on Primus for a little while. And he was one of the sound guys, and he's another really good friend of mine. I still talk to him really quite regularly. And we were on the side of the stage one night watching the show. We were standing there talking. We're just kind of, you just shoot the shit while you're standing there. Well, they're playing, and Lur sees us standing over there talking. And Matt was messing with the sound. I think he was doing monitors at the time and pulls up the isolation of Lur on the monitor right there next to us that's on that side. And Lur sees us over there just chatting, and he looks over at us, and it's in the middle of a solo. He just starts ripping this Jerry Garcia solo right in it and just looks right at us and just like, bee, and just starts playing it just the way Jerry plays them. And I was like, and we're just laughing because it's just like, that we were the Grateful Dead guys that came over, because there was a lot of, with the sound guys, there was a lot of crossover between Grateful Dead and
with the Primus, ultrasound connection.
The ultrasound connection. And then some of those lighting guys, like I came over and then I brought a couple of guys with me that had done Grateful Dead stuff because it's somebody that the band knows, and Derek knows these guys and knows from ultrasound to light and sound design where I was working, and was like, oh, we want to get everybody in to be a family. I want everybody to get along. There's right not on. A lot and of us.
That is the Primus vibe.
Yeah. Family and it's vibe. Like, we want to have a nice family vibe going here, and everybody gets along and everyone's cool. And it's like, well, if I could bring these guys over from the Grateful Dead to come be on this crew, I know I can get along with them. We're doing that. But it was pretty funny. We're just standing there and Lur just starts ripping this Jerry Garcia solo right in the middle of the song. Like,
yeah,
like, nobody even like, I can't remember. I'm pretty sure it was one on the Brown tour, and like nobody, Les and Brain, nobody, they don't skip a beat. They don't even notice that he's playing this totally the solo. It's not the solo for the song. Yeah. And he's doing it just for our benefit. That's so
great. Brain had no idea what he was playing.
Yeah.
Probably Brain's never monitors, heard the Grateful right? Dead ever.
But I probably didn't have Lur in his monitors.
Yeah. But Lur is that sneaky dude that he knows people are listening on the crew, and he'll sneak.
And he's such a great guitar player. Like if I'd been on Metallica, he probably would have played some Metallica solo right there for it. Just slid it in there because he saw that I was paying attention. Because like I don't, you know, like Soya and I want, you know, and guys working backstage are not always watching the show.
Right.
Like the guitar techs and the drum techs and, you know, basic, they're watching the show. Monitor guys watching the show, but the sound guys and lighting guys, I'm. As soon as the show starts, I'm thinking about loading out.
Yeah,
right on.
So like that's my next thing is like I get this into the truck and get to the next city and put it all up and let's do it again. So I'm not always watching the show, but you know there were occasions when I would watch, and that was the 2 hours during show times when I actually could just kind of sit down and chill.
Yeah,
you know stuff breaks and I got to go fix it. And
then you hear Lur play Grateful Dead Jerry solo. You're like,
and then you're just like, oh, it's all worth it.
And he like looks over his shoulder, looks at you sitting in your hammock. He goes, that's for you, cheese. And here you go. That's when I dipped the mallets into the lighter fluid and handed them to Jerry. And then they did, you know, Eruption. You know?
I put the mallets out that night. I mean, I put the drums out that night when we lit them on. Was that Seattle? I put the drums out that night. Me and you put the drums out, or me and Jerry.
I handed Jerry those dipsticks, and it's on the
that Tupperware thing.
It's nice. On the rhinoplasty video, you guys, where the drums are on fire.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Cheese was there for that night. Yeah. That was me and Jerry came up with a Van Halen moment, and
you came up with the Van Halen moment, and you got the lighter fluid, and you got the mallets, and it was Soya. It
was Jerry was like, "Fuck that! Come on, dude, we're lighting these things. Let's do it!"
But I remember, and Jerry was just like, "Well, what if it melts the heads, and then I got to replace it?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, Jerry's gonna have to do work." Okay, Soya's like, "I don't care, dude. Let's light this thing on fire, man. This is gonna."
Tim Soya was like, "Fuck you, dude. We're lighting this shit on fire. This is gonna be rad."
And once you talk Brain into it, it was on. That was a thing. Oh, Jerry, it was Jerry on, wasn't dude. Backing out. Brain's like, are you sure? And so he's like, fuck yeah, this will be the best.
He kicked that whole kit off the drum riser. It was on fire on the stage, on fire in a pile. And Brain walked off. And Les is like, I guess that's it. No encore.
If you're a Primus fan, chances are the band Ween is on your radar. Available now. The world's only zine about Ween. Don't Get Too Close to My Fanzine is the brownest zine ever produced, and issue 6 is scorching hot off the presses. Go to theweenzine.com to order issue 6 now for only $10, and all previous issues are available as a free download, including issue 5, which features a piece by our pal Frankie, which may contain Bowie references. Prepare the mount, boys. Find the cheese, because the mollusk, it lingers. At theweenzine.com and on Instagram at @weenzine. Talking lyrics, these are really autobiographical lyrics. And I remember in an interview around the Brown Album era, and Frankie, you've probably read the same one, that he said, yeah, that's really the first time I've just straight up told people about myself, you know, in an autobiographical way, lyrically.
I recall that.
Yeah. So this is a departure lyrically. It's got a nice conceit. You know, it's when I was born is the first rhyme. And then at 13, at 14, at 17. So we have that conceit. And then there's a nice, it's turned on its head for the last one, because it's at 19, because he, you know, this is what I love about this song, because most other people writing a song like this would go, yeah, when I was a kid, I'd get naked with this girl and we had a great time, you know. And there's a little bit of the bragging going on, as you do in the rock world, but as Les Claypool does, he turns it on his head and he says, well, at 19, she was doing drugs. So I'm so glad I wasn't doing drugs, essentially is what he's saying, of course. So then it goes back into that chorus of hats off to the people that helped me out, which is also a great thing, because he's paying homage to these people who essentially are nameless and they probably know who they are. who helped him out along the way, because he's talked about the family history as far as drug problems go, and just living in a place where they're prevalent, and a lot of his friends fell into the same shit. So yeah, that's what I really appreciate about it.
This track, along with Shake Hands With Beef, are the two songs on the album that don't deal with any characters at all. They are straight up autobiographical. And in the case of Hats Off, you know, there are several hints to stuff he has discussed in interviews.
Yeah.
At 14, I pulled some weeds and bought a four string. So he has shared that anecdote many times about, you know, getting the funds to buy a bass guitar or paying for it. At nine, and there's another part. I made myself a motion picture. All right. So that's, you know, it's like a preface to how he would be directing his own videos in the future. Hats off to all the ones that stood before me and taught a fool to rhyme. That sounds like a homage to all the bands and the artists that he liked listening to. And, you know, as a whole, I agree with you completely, Josh. The song sounds like, you know, kind of a brief note of gratitude to all the people that had an influence in his life. And then in the second verse, we get this really, really cool, quick rundown of his life. And the Bean Burrito line is wonderful.
It is a good one. I like that one. Yeah. Soya probably wishes the lyric was wrapped maybe like an Al Pastor taco, but
yes,
can't always get what you want.
So we're not going to just gloss over the hot tub zone, are we? Jeez. You know what that is?
No, I have no idea. I thought he was just stretching for a rhyme.
No, I looked up the lyrics because we were talking about the song. And I'm like, hot tub zone. I was like, that sounds really weird. So there used to be these places that would just, they'd have these rooms and they'd be hot tubs in them with like an 8-track player and a 19-inch color TV. And it was like, you'd just go to the hot tub zone or whatever it was called in your area. Cause they had them here in my hometown. I was like, that sounds vaguely familiar.
Dude, like, Les used to go to the hot tub place in Berkeley, dude.
A room. I don't know. I can't even describe anything that would be like it now, other than you just go to this place and it's got six rooms and there's six hot tubs in there with six TVs and six, you know, showers and whatever. And then you just go hot tubbing.
That's a revelation there, Josh.
That's that must be a weird California thing that I know.
I mean, it sounds totally Northern California to me.
That's also the influence of with Bob Cock in the hot tub in that one video they did where Bob's in the beginning. What song is that, Frankie?
My Name Is Mutt. Well, he's like in a spa and he's submerged in mud.
He's in a sauna. Yeah. He's in a sauna in that one. So
I'm telling you, Les used to go to the hot tub places in Berkeley, you know?
Yeah. You can just like go there and get an hourly rate to go with your girlfriend to sit in a hot tub.
Have sex in the hot tub.
I don't have a hot tub in my house. So
It wasn't about dudes.
I mean, it's the best name ever, right? I mean, hot tub zone.
Let's go to the hot tub zone. Yeah. Okay, well, that takes on
a legit, dude. Wow. You salute that one. That's legit.
Those places are closed down. They don't exist anymore, right?
They went away with all the waterbed stores.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It sounds like that was a product of the swinging 70s that spilled into
most definitely.
While. Yeah.
I had a waterbed.
The closest thing to that is still going on is, you know, the internet cafes in Japan where they actually have computers and manga for customers to read, and they also have showers because a lot of people live in the internet cafe in Japan. They just rent a cubicle there and you can take a shower the next day.
My friend Dave and I did that one night in Japan. He was like, check this out, people basically live in these. I was like, we should spend the night in one of these, this would be fun. But we just stayed up playing video games much of the night and then just crashed on the couch and went and got food and drink whenever we wanted, and it was like $8. It was nothing. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty accessible.
Wow. No comment.
Well, the hot tub zone is probably a little more salacious, obviously. All the stuff around hygiene and hot tubs just gives me the heebie-jeebies there, especially when you've got a bunch of teenagers.
I can't imagine getting into a hot tub in Berkeley at the hot tub place.
It's not they don't call it a hot tub place there in Berkeley. They call it a bath.
Yes.
That's right. It's a bathhouse.
Like, I'm going to go take a bath this week.
Well, see, I would think, though, as a 17-year-old like Les was and many people were who had access to hot tub zones, you figured that was like a romantic outing.
Right on.
You know, let's go get in the hot tub. This will be fun.
I had a buddy that managed a motel right off of I-5.
Oh, boy.
And he was about 20 years old, and we went down there and he took us like on the tour. It was a brand new motel right off the freeway, and it had one of those ones where the hot tub's in the room. Like,
oh yeah,
literally it's it's the hot tub, the nightstand, the king size bed. And that's how close they were, like right in a row. And I was like,
the jacuzzi tub. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, people come in here for this. He's all, dude, this is our best room we have. And I was like, I understand it's your best room, but we're in a motel. So I don't know, your best room is kind of, you know, pushing it. He goes, no, we rent this thing out all the time. I was like, oh, okay.
Man.
And it's like, yeah, they had a hot tub room and it was dude, just carpet everywhere.
That is the stepping stone from the put the quarter in the bed vibrator.
Yeah, it's a next level. On tour, I never stayed in a room with a massage.
On the
biggest
family tours, we did shitty fucking hotels, and every once in a while, we were like, "Oh, there's the metal box. You put a quarter in," and we just like put one in.
I judged most of the hotel rooms. I judged most of our hotel rooms whether the remote control was bolted down to the nightstand or not.
Yes. Just is on a swivel.
It was like it had a 45 degree angle depending on where your TV was.
Right. I remember those.
Yeah. Well, at least just to finish with the lyrics, it's really amazing how so many times Les is talking about these things that we have no clue what he's going on about. I mean, for me, the hot tub song was just like the bathroom in his house. Like, literally, he was just stepping into the bathtub with his girlfriend. I had no idea that it was like this actual place where people went to take a bath. So it's not the first time this has happened. There are several occasions where we have gotten his lyrics wrong.
Yeah.
So you've talked about it before. It's just like Les has this, he has a memory and ability to pull these little facts from here and there. It's like, it took me listening to the song and reading the lyrics to go hot tub. Holy shit. That hot tub zone used to be a thing. Like there was a thing. And then I was on a, rabbit hole down YouTube looking for hot tub zone commercials from the 70s and 80s. And you're like, I was like, oh my God, it just flashes you back. And you're like, oh, I totally remember these crazy places. Yeah. And it's like, in the 70s, there were a lot of stuff like that. Like I said, there's waterbed stores that, like, they came, they were icons, and then they were gone. And you're like, well, and then you drive by, and it's like, oh, they sell 4x4 parts there. I remember that used to be the waterbed store. And you're like, okay,
that's
how it is. But he pulls these things out. He notices everything. And I remember one of the episodes, like, from way back when Soyo was talking about how Les, he picks up on everything. And actually, the last episode, you guys were talking about the Sacramento show, that first the first show of the Brown Tour.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was at the Memorial Auditorium. That video was online. Someone had recorded the show. And the video's gone now, but it was online. And there's this thing where Les kind of does this thing. You know, he starts a song and he does that little jam and he does this little duck walk thing around the stage.
Yep.
And he's kind of looking around. And it just kind of looks like kind of part of the show. But I just remember him doing that. And then it'd be like after the show, he'd go up to Jake, the lighting guy and the lighting designer. And he'd be like, hey Jake, there was a light up there and it was like shaking around, but no light was coming out of it. What was wrong? You're like, he noticed it that like that light wasn't on at the time. And like, sometimes they're supposed to be on and shaking their head and sometimes they're not or whatever. But
he's like I paid $80 tonight. Why is it not working?
Yeah.
And like, he does this thing and it's like the very first part of the show because it was the first show of the tour and he looks up and he's like looking up and it's like it looks like he's just kind of doing his little thing where he kind of just swings the bass around and looks up in the air, but he's looking at the lights. He notices that stuff and he's just like, I know after one of the shows, Jake, what happened to that light? It was shaking. There was no light coming out. It's like, I'm a songwriter or anything, but it's like you try to do stuff like that and it's just like it's a he has a great ability for a non sequitur too.
Yeah.
And pull them in and all that stuff tied together, even though none of it was related other than his age at the time, like he gives his age and then what happened? And you're like, okay,
it's like crazy. The care level. Where is it at? Like back then he really was like looking at every single light every single night.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at our 1897 connection, if you'll indulge me, gentlemen. And so I'll put it up on our Instagram at Primus Tracks and you can see it there. This is an advertisement from 1897 from Jordan Marsh and Company for men's hats and caps.
That hat on the lower left, that's been used for the visuals when we performed the song live.
Oh, without a doubt, Frankie, I'm telling you, if you look at these 12 hats that are on this visual, you guys right now and everybody listening, all tens and tens of you, if you do an image search on Google for Les Claypool hat or Les Claypool weird hat, He has worn a version of each 12 of each of these 12 at some point.
Yep. That's right.
And I was just and I don't know everything he's worn and done, but I was just like, oh sure, the golf cap there, middle left. He wore that in some of the Naugahyde promo stuff. You know, I'm like, the bowler hat, absolutely. The flat brim.
New Year's
I remember
Eve.
The holy that one in the holy mackerel photo shoot, I think he had it on, you know.
Yep.
So I'm just like, oh, I remember these images where he's wearing all these different hats. And seriously, and now I have actual tangible proof that this album was recorded in 1897 because of what like this is where all his fashion comes from. He must have been born in 1897 too, secretly.
Josh, I want to chime in here. My job at the Punch Bowl tour was to help Les pick out what hat he wanted to wear for the night. And he had about four of these, right? We had them in hat boxes in the road case. And he'd be like, what do you think? So this hat tonight, this hat, and he has a straw hat, like lower left, the very bottom one down there, right? Yep. With the flat brim. Red, white, and blue ribbon around it. And it was my favorite one that he wore. And the one night that I got him to wear that, that I forced it on him, was at the Greek Theater in Berkeley on the Punch Bowl tour. And he wore that hat. Jay Blakesburg took pictures of that show. And there's pictures of Les with that straw flat brim hat. Is amazing. I love that look on him. And he hated it. He's like, I don't want to wear that hat. Yeah, so stupid, so corny. It's like, dude, that hat tonight.
I'm feeling good now. I feel like we're cracking the code of the Brown album, finally.
So Josh, am I right in assuming nobody has recorded a cover of Hats Off?
Couldn't find any covers, man. I am
what? No way! Come on.
Ever since the first five tracks, great success. But so
have they played Hats Off with Tim since he came back?
Never.
Well, let's cleanse our palate then with some live cuts, Frankie.
Right off, Josh. So let's start with Indianapolis Murat Theater, a show notorious for its amount of deep cuts.
You can definitely understand what the bass is doing now with the dobro way better.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, it's faster than the studio recording.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Very.
That is racetrack.
And you can also notice that besides the solo, they also extend the song by entering, you know, by introducing the lyrics even one segment after the studio version.
Yeah, they add some bars there. Absolutely, yeah. They went through that cycle again. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. I kind of wish I could get one live.
It was amazing.
Jeez, what did you think about that?
Oh, no. It's funny that they play it. So they're going to have to put a solo in and extend the playing the first verse if you're going to play it that fast. They'd be done in a minute 30.
In and out. Right.
On to My Name is Mud. All right.
Yeah, over. There we go. Yeah, Sean. But Frankie's happy. Let's move on to the next one. This next one, the boat we cover.
We got that out of the way. Okay.
All right. What else you got?
We got Tooks on 2013. Another notorious show for deep cuts. So this was after the 3D tour, but they were still, you know, playing the rare tracks every now and then. So this is one of my favorite shows from 2013.
Anyway, we're going to play a little something for you from the Brown album.
Pause. Listen to that crowd. They went nuts. Holy. They went nuts for the Brown album.
Okay. I can't believe Chief was in the crowd at that show.
They thought it was beef.
Well, let's break their hearts.
Chiefs had a Coors Light in the crowd that night.
I like that variant he threw in there.
The dobro is a bit more bouncy on this one than the previous one, I think.
Yes, very bouncy. And that it fits it really well, actually, when I envision him doffing his 1897 cap to a bunch of people who he's grateful to. This makes perfect sense.
If there's anything that can break up Falls Van Cleef, this is the song.
Right? Oh, man. Telling you.
Jeez, are you hearing the Jerry Garcia and that shit?
Yeah, he's ripping. Everything he plays is killer.
That was great.
Wow.
Thank you, guys. That was awesome, man. Larry just ruling right there.
Wow. I want to point out two things. First, it would have been amazing to have something like that on the record. And second, I don't know if Larry is completely improvising that or if he rehearsed it, but it's absolutely phenomenal.
Frankie, every time they get to a song like that, Les looks over and goes, Lur, go. And Lur just
goes.
Makes it up.
I mean,
that was absolutely incredible.
I love that.
For the infrequency of them playing it, why would Lur wouldn't bother to learn something?
No.
we're going to play it three times ever. Dude,
That right there was one of a kind, dude. He made that up on the spot right there. Man. For sure. Absolutely. I will tell you 100%.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Wow.
That's amazing. That was a great cut. Thank you guys. Mm.
And it wasn't just a soundboard, Tim.
Thank you. Frankie. I hate the soundboard, Tim.
Oh, you're gonna be all right. You'll survive, Soya. It's just a soundboard.
Oh, Cheese will agree on the soundboard tapes for you.
No, I have a favorite cut off the soundboard.
Speaking of soundboard tapes, Cheese brought a track of his own here for us to check out. Ooh, so
awesome.
A little bit of a rare live cut here. If you need tangible proof that Cheese was on tour with Primus, you're about to hear it.
What are you doing there, Cheese? That's Cheese right there. He's a hell of a guy. He's right there. See him? Check him out. It's Cheese. How many people do you know that are actually named Cheese? I know a guy named Cheese. And he's like 7 feet tall, so that's almost like two people named Cheese. So that's a couple of Cheeses right there.
Fucking awesome.
So the night that that happened, we used to have these lighting trees that were right down front of the stage that used to light from the side, and they had these big color changers on them, and one of them stopped working, and I had to climb out. Like, it's, they're like 8 feet tall, and I had to kind of climb up one and get it reset, and it was right in front of him, and so he basically stopped the show and did the whole thing. And so I went to Shiruki and I was like, dude, you got to get me a recording, because they did all the ADATs. They were doing all the ADATs on that whole
recording
tour.
On ADATs for the whole Punch Bowl tour.
I'm like, dude, you got to get me a copy. So he gives me a cassette tape like the next day or the day after. And he's like, oh, here it is. And he put the little bit in the front, and then he gave me the whole song. And the funny thing is I've had that tape since 98. I just got it digitized.
I've never heard that one, dude.
I got it digitized 2 weeks ago. And then send it to Josh.
Yeah.
I was like, awesome, I got to get this. Man. I go, I got something that Soya's never heard. Because I
never heard that. Man. It's proof that Les really cares about his crew. And he gives everybody props whenever he can. You know,
and that's, he notices so cool everything that, too. And you know what the funny thing was, is I remember listening to it and him saying cheese and cheese. And then, you know, the end is so Les. Like, that's like a couple of cheeses. And I was like, that is so Les. But I didn't, until I just got it digitized and then sent it to Josh and was listening to it, I missed the part with the only of the cheese. I didn't remember hearing that part. I just, you know, like, you know, I don't remember anything that was happening at the moment. I remember at the moment. And the thing is, if I hadn't had asked Shuruki for it at the moment, it would be kind of lost. You know what I mean? And yeah. I was just like, dude, I got to get a copy of that. That was so funny. And I love the ending of that song. I've always loved the end, that dun, dun, dun. Because then I know, and it's a lighting guy thing. It's like, dun, dun. And then the lights, the whole audience lights shoot off. And, you know, this.
Yeah.
We have all these lighting cues and everything. And I remember, you know, the My Name is Mud and there's Tommy the Cat lighting cues. And I still remember them from being on tour and all, like where I was and what I needed to do. And I had a lot of jobs with Primus actually when it came down to it. Cause I was the lighting crew chief for the Punch Bowl tour. I was a lighting crew chief and the stage manager for the Brown tour and the Snowcore tour.
Man.
I was the lighting operator and guitar tech for the Australian tour.
Wow.
Guitar tech for the Videoplasty video shoot. And I hesitate to mention this. I was a lighting operator for the HBO Reverb.
Wow. Really? So, you were there?
Yeah. It was the worst.
The Irving Plaza one?
It was the worst.
Oh, my God.
Ever.
Dude.
So we get to the gig and they fly me from home all the way to New York to do one gig, just to do lights for this gig. Cause I'd done lights before and Jake, the normal guy, wasn't available. And they was like, I wasn't the last person they called, but I was, I get out there and we start doing rehearsals. And I'm like looking at this lighting board. I'd never worked with. I'm trying to get these looks going and all this stuff. And Les comes out. And every time I'd bring something up, Les would be like, turn the lights down. I was like, okay, well, we're doing TV. Like,
yeah,
you got to have a lot of light during TV. Like, that's kind of the thing, is turn the lights up. So I'd bring them down again, and we'd get a little further, and I'd start kind of edging them all up and trying to get a little more light. And geez, can we bring the lights down a little? I was like, we don't want to. And the video guy keeps coming to me going, can we get more light on stage? And I was like, oh, I have a lot of lights to bring up. He just keeps telling me to turn them down.
Yep.
And that video, I'm sure you guys have seen it. It is dark. Yep. It is very dark. And I felt so handcuffed. I'm like, they flew me all the way out here. And all we had to do was just barely turn the lights on. I could have just turned them on and left. Cause he was like, he didn't want a moving. He didn't want, I don't know what he was going for at that point, but it was a bummer. Cause I'm like, I'm doing an HBO show. I'm the lighting operator for a show that is on HBO. And I am not super proud of what's going on HBO right now. And if I tell my friends, I'm like, hey, and there's some videos online of it. And I've looked it up and I was like, oh, this looks bad. And I was like, and not to mention, you know, edit the perm.
Right.
I was like, oh, this is not the greatest thing ever. And there were some other things that were like,
well, Les has mentioned that it's not a perm. It's a pubic hair transplant.
It was a perm.
I'm pretty sure that Porkchop probably came up with that.
Josh, please edit all
Chris,
of this.
Chris, but this is a long shot, but that is the only time they ever did The Family and the Fishing Net. Do you have any recollection about that song?
No, there's no net, no. I love when bands switch up their set list, which is a Primus thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was on Poison for, I think, 10 months. It was the same set list every single. I knew exactly where we were in the set every single night because stuff had to happen. There were pyro cues, which Primus doesn't have, and there were drum stunts, and there were guitar solos, and there was all this stuff that had to go on. None of that had to go. Like Primus is like, no, this is, we're set it and forget it.
Les does not like to do that. And on that Brown tour that we did, as boring as things got, or as low as the reception got, he still mixed the setup every night.
Yeah. And we made it fun. We had to, because it's like, it's just, there's nothing worse. Because like, it wasn't going great towards the end, but it was like, it's still just us. Like in Europe, I think there was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There was like 8 of us in Europe, I think. Not in Europe, in Australia. There was 8 of us. That's all we had. That was it. It was us. And we'd go play these tiny little clubs. And they were sweaty and hot, and the lighting rig sucked, and the sound system sucked. And, you know, it was like we were using rented gear for the amp. The back line stuff was all rented gear. So, like, some night you'd get a really nice drum kit, and some night you wouldn't get a really nice drum kit. You know, Lur was good because Lur just needed, like, a Marshall half stack.
That's
and,
it.
You know, like, Lur's good. Drums aren't always so good. And, you know, less that's just a bass driven band. So when
we brought all of Les's stuff always.
Yeah. So when it's not a good, you know, if you go back line, it's not great. That's not going to be great. Yeah. So
Lasso's the only dude, even in the low times during the Brown, his stuff went. Lur, we'll get you a Marshall half stack. Bring your
carried his pedal board.
Tim, you're getting what we get. You know?
Yeah.
But Les, his stuff always flew.
Yeah.
Speaking of tour things, as we wrap this up, Soya, do you care to explain this?
Chow that bird, dude.
What is the ACU, Soya?
Man, geez, you know about ACU.
All right. I know, because I sent this to Josh.
Yeah.
Dude, you sent this to me. Okay, that laminate right there. Primus had laminates that were the all access for like the A crew, Eatonburg, whatever. But me and Les goes back to the Suck on This. Before Suck on This, Berkeley Square, one block up, there was a burger place on the corner. And me and Les would go up there after soundcheck and get a burger. And we'd say, chow that burger. Like, okay, soundcheck's over. Chow that burger. Yeah, let's go chow the burger. And we go get a hamburger because they were like a dollar, you know, $2.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, chow that burger. Fuck. So that picture is from... I don't know where it's from, but we were somewhere. Me and Les would always say, chow that bird. Like, let's go get the hamburger, yeah. You know? Someone took a picture of me chewing on the bird. I'm biting into a hamburger. See that? Chow that bird.
There it is.
So me and Les would always say, chow that fucking bird. It was like, he just called me, go, chow that bird. All right, cool. Go in the lobby, meet him. We go find the hamburger place, you know, and get a bird. So, cheese. ACU is the Ass Cutters Union.
Yep.
That's Pork Chop and Jerry.
Yep.
So when you would fart on stage, you were ass cutting, dude. You're cutting ass. So then we formed a union because Les was like, nobody is allowed to fart on stage. I do not want to fucking smoke fart.
We played one of these gigs and it was super, super hot. And Pork Chop had one of those fans, you know, like a big, you know, like the 26 inch wire fan that was sitting right there pointing on Les. And I had one brewing up and I walked over to his side of the stage and just, I let one rip and it was so bad that Les left his side of the stage and went over and sang the rest of the song on Lur's mic.
Oh, yeah, man.
Because I'm telling
you, you guys.
And it was a pretty regular thing. Like Pork Chop would let him go.
Oh, dude.
He'd just go, Ass Cutters Union, buddy. And it's like, that's, well, yeah, ACU? You got to let that go. ACU. And ACU? Then we just, you're like, yeah, that's what happens. But I went over there and Les whipped his head around and was looking at Pork Chop. And I was standing there in front of the fan and he was not well, and he went to Lur's side and sang. And like, I mean, you got to have video of all these shows, right? Where are all the videos? So
I'm telling you right now, you guys, I was not allowed to fart on stage at Primus shows if Les was playing. He told me, Soya, your farts smell like cat shit, and I do not want to smell that when I'm playing my bass. I was not allowed to fart on stage, and that's when Pork Chop and Jerry were farting on stage and the Ass Cutters Union came about. That's what ACU is.
Well, it's a hostile work environment when you guys are.
Oh, well, definitely. Well, that's, if you're on tour, that's basically what being on tour is. It's a hostile work environment.
Yeah, that bird. That's
a fucking deal.
That's so amazing. That laminate. That's like Punchbowl era.
But the one, you know what? You can barely see the one on the left there is that's the one with Jerry holding the bottle. Is it Pork Chop's, the JD bottle?
Oh, that's Pork Chop drunk in the back lounge yet.
Yeah, that's...
The one that we did with Jerry as a samurai in Japan in the bar was the next one, dude. Oh, my God.
That was that one with Jerry and with Pork Chop was the Brown Tour laminate. It was the one, and he's... Oh. Pork Chop's got his head up, and Jerry's holding the bottle of JD.
Oh, my God.
Just sliding right down.
Nice.
That stuff Those happened. Guys. That stuff happened a lot on tour. Like it would happen once a week. There'd be once a week where the bus would just be, and it didn't matter if it was a day off the next day. It was just this, like
the moment just, happened.
Yeah. And I was like, Jerry bought this guitar at a pawn shop for like $100, this Gibson guitar. And like at the time it was missing a bunch of parts around the bridge. Well, it's like, well, you're on tour with a bunch of guitar techs and roadies and stuff. So it took nothing to get this guitar up and running. And Jerry's in the back lounge, like up on the seat, and he's like playing a solo, and we had a little guitar amp back there, and he's just like, and that's just what you did. And like, we're just drinking and getting, like, Porkchop didn't drink that much, but when he did, it was on. And it was like, oh, okay, Porkchop's drinking tonight, let's do this. And we,
yeah,
it would be crazy. Like, we'd just be up all night, and then we'd go a week and everything would be fine. It would just be, oh yeah, we get on the bus after the show, you have a little food, you go to bed, and we wake up in the next city. And then some nights you get on the bus and it's like, oh no, it's on. Like the music's blaring. They're playing something. It's just super loud in the back lounge and people are smoking and like drinking. And then we're just like, okay, I guess it's party night. And then that becomes party night. And you're like, you're not going to sleep because they're just going to keep you awake.
Yeah.
And you just do that and keep going and keep going and keep going. And then, yeah.
Awesome.
It was good times. That's the part about being on tour. Being a roadie kind of sucks sometimes, but. Yeah.
There's
these highs and lows. There's this 10-foot dragon costume, and there's, you know, and you have stories to tell about getting hit by a load bar and carrying back off stage every night.
And I want to end it with this. I want to say hats off to the road crew, man, because you guys, of course, make it happen for guys like me and Frankie who show up and get to see a show with adequate lighting. You know, no matter what Les says, we can still see him. Yeah. So it works out. So yeah, hats off. You've been tracked. Cheese. Awesome stories. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Chris. It was amazing speaking with you.
Yeah.
Thanks for
embarrassing Soy a little bit for sure.
Me and Cheese are just like chipping away at the iceberg, dude.
Yeah, we should do this again. I got lots of stories about.
We gotta get you
back. Dude, I have so many. It's so funny. These guys pry them out of me. It's weird.
Yeah. And then I start, you know, I got little stuff from, you know, little tiny bits here and there, and then Soy will bring it and remember something that had happened. And yeah.
Yeah.
You bet. Yeah. Hey, Frankie, next week, Pudentane.
You may have difficulty catching breath when we record that one, Josh.
Thank you, everybody. At Primus Tracks on Instagram and Twitter. Chris, do you want to plug anything?
I'm in a band called The Brodies.
High energy rock and roll, man. I was listening to it earlier. I like it.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Played some shows with Soya. Yeah, we're on Facebook. I'm not sure if we're on Instagram. I have to check all that stuff. You know, we're just a bunch of, you know, we just dudes play rock and roll. That's pretty much how we, that's how we roll.
And you rip, dude.
Thanks, Soya.
There you go. Later days.
Willie Mays.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.